Now, real people, real opinions, Nighttime Talk.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
Welcome back to Nighttime Talk with Gary Brennan in for Niall. Now, it's time for a bit of magic. We all love a bit of magic. And my guest tonight is an international headline magician and mentalist that has been touring the world with his show for many years. Christian Grey's show is in constant demand with some of the most luxurious cruise lines around the world. Sounds like a dream job, to be honest with you. I'll talk to him a little bit about that one because I'd love to work on a cruise. Played to packed out theatres with his comedy magic, Christian leaves his audiences gasping with amazement and laughing out loud. The Irish magician brings a show packed full of mind-boggling magic and illusion. And he joins me now. You're very welcome to the show, Christian.
How's it going, Gary? How are you doing?
Fine, magic. You see what I did there? No, it's great.
I see what you did. I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, it's great to chat with you because it's one thing I've always wanted to do is talk to a magician because I've got so many questions for you. And so I suppose we'll start with the obvious one. What inspired you to become a magician?
You know what? I suppose it started as most magician story starts, you know, the usual, they were, you know, 5, 6, 7 years old, you get your first magic set. And I suppose I started in that kind of vein as well. I got my first magic set one Christmas, and in typical fashion as a, you know, 5, 6 year old, when it started getting a bit too difficult, under the bed it goes and never touched it again. Whereas, you know, maybe other kids kept at it. And it was only really when I was in university in UCD that I was watching David Blaine on repeat one night, and I thought, you know what, I might just go out and get a deck of cards and mess around with this. And it's only really then, when I was 17, 18 years old, that I started taking it seriously and started to pursue it from there.
So it started really with cards. That's where you got your love of magic. And apart from the magic set you got when you were younger, when you came to it, it was cards, was it? Is that where most magicians start, with the card tricks?
I think so, yeah. Card tricks would be definitely the gateway, I suppose, for magic. It's the, I suppose, most accessible thing. Maybe that, or maybe, you know, it's just sleight of hand in general, with maybe coins or pens and anything you can find around the house, really. All that kind of other stuff, bigger illusions and mentalism and all that kind of stuff comes later. But for sure, I think card tricks are the first thing everyone gets into.
And how do you learn these tricks? Don't you need someone to show you? Like the magic circle, we all know about that, the kind of the secrecy that goes on behind, you know, the secrets to the whole thing. How do you go about learning? Yeah. I know nowadays maybe kids just go on YouTube, probably. I don't know. But
absolutely, yeah. There is definitely a wealth of knowledge on YouTube these days. When I started, I had the same problem. You know, you can find... even back then, like with YouTube, you could find simple card tricks and things, you know, everything your granddad would show you when you're a kid and things like that. But when you really wanted to get into the serious sleight of hand, you know, it was kind of, the gates were closed. You're like, how do I get this information? And it was only for me by chance that I bumped into a magician at a party or a friend's house or something like that. And he put me onto this book. It's called The Royal Road to Card Magic. And that's kind of what I think is considered the holy grail, the holy Bible of card magic. So I went straight to the library next day, got that book, and that was the start of it, where you start really, you know, I suppose, seeing behind the veil, behind the curtain.
Yeah. And so the information is out there on how to perfect this art, because it is an art form. There's no doubt about it.
It's absolutely out there. It's just you have to know where to look. Like, all of the information you could ever need is there, but it's just knowing the right places to find it.
And what's the most challenging trick you've ever learned? And why was it so difficult?
It's a good question. I'm trying to think now. The most challenging trick I've ever done, it was probably, it's one I do in my show now. I used to close the show with it for years. It's now kind of in the centerpiece of the show, in the middle of it. But I do a floating table around the room, and at the end of the routine, the table lands on stage and vanishes.
It disappears. So the table disappears.
The table disappears, and it can be done full 360, you know, and people can be standing 2 feet away from it and you wouldn't have a clue. And that was probably, I suppose, one of the more challenging things to get, you know, perfect, to make sure all angles were covered and it's just, you know, you're covered every time.
But you don't learn something like that in a book, do you, Christian? You have to, you develop those
you
tricks yourself.
Don't. Yeah, for something like that, I went to a prop builder in Germany, and he's the only one in the world who makes these props, this specific prop. And so I got him to build this for me, and he knows the intricacies of everything there is to do about this illusion. So I spent some time with him learning and finding out the best way to perform this specific illusion. So yeah, that was about maybe two weeks of just spending time with him and practicing before I flew out. And I think my first time I performed it, I was on a cruise ship, I think in Venice, somewhere like that. Absolutely, you know, shaking on stage, hoping I was going to get this trick right.
Hoping it works. And do they ever go wrong?
Yeah.
Do they ever go wrong when you're live?
They do go wrong, of course. Not a lot these days, but I don't know, maybe one out of every 100 shows, you might get something that goes wrong. But I thought, you know, doing it so long now, you have things to cover yourself. You can get out of things like if it goes wrong. For me, I'm much more of a comedy-based magician. So if it was more of a serious magician, maybe something going wrong would be a lot more, I suppose, obvious and hard to kind of get away from and maybe quite awkward. Whereas with me, everything's just, you know, we're just having a laugh. It's a bit of comedy. So if something goes wrong, it's not that big of a deal in my show.
It almost adds to the show.
Absolutely, because it's quite a slapstick show. So when something goes wrong, even if someone doesn't know it's gone wrong, it's a lot easier to move on or get past it or cover it than if it was just a straightforward, you know, serious magic show.
When I was a kid, Christian, magic was this big, giant secret, and there was only certain people that knew how to do it. And like, my mind always goes to, you're going to think this is so random, but professional wrestling in the United States, like the WWEs of the world, they used to be very, very guarded about the business and about how they protected the business. And it was almost impossible to train as a wrestler. You hear The Rock talking about how he got into wrestling only because his dad would train him, and he didn't even want to train him because it was so secretive. And I got the impression magic used to be like that. But has it eased off a little bit, and they're a little bit more open and accessible and willing to take new magicians in and teach them different things?
It definitely is more open these days. I remember when I started, it was for sure quite still closed off, and you know, if you wanted to learn a certain illusion or trick, and it was if this was someone's, you know, someone invents it, and it was hard to kind of get the information, or I want to learn that, could you teach it to me, can I buy it, can I do this, and it was very difficult to, especially for those bigger illusions or tricks, those were very guarded, and it was, you know, very gatekeepy. It's very hard to get in on that. These days, it's a lot more open, especially with the big magic conventions around the world. I go to the Blackpool Magic Convention every February, which is the biggest magic convention in the world. About 3,500-4,000 magicians that descend on this poor little town in Blackpool every year. And all the latest and greatest things in magic are released there every year. And it's amazing to see how open it is. And if you want to learn something from the greatest name in magic, you can just walk right up to them and say hi, and they'll show you right off the bat. It's amazing.
Wow, that sounds like good fun. Apart
from
anything else.
Fun. It's like, you know, you're like a kid in a candy store, because all the biggest magic dealers and shops in the world set up shop there for the weekend, and you can literally just, you can go wild.
That's great. And so what goes into the process of putting together a new show? You're looking at a blank page and you're trying to come up with new tricks or ideas for your performances. Is there an awful lot of experimentation involved?
For sure. It's not really, a lot of people think it's the tricks that I think that comes to mind. It's the hard part is finding the tricks. The tricks are the easy part. The hard part is the bits that go in between the tricks, the patter, the dialogue. How are you going to present the routine? Because in theory, a magic trick can be done, you know, in a minute or two. It's the hard part, making that magic trick interesting, making people care about it, and making it last, you know, more than a minute that it actually really takes to do the trick. Those are the hard parts, and how to weave them together and make it make sense and tell the story throughout the show.
And the audience interaction is important for what you do, isn't it?
Oh, very much so. It's very much a give and take with a magic show. I remember I was actually on a cruise ship a couple of months ago, and the ship was docked in Dubai overnight, and they decided to have a show that night.
Right.
And it was my show, and I was like, I went up to them and said, "Are you sure you want to do the show tonight?" They're like, "Yeah, it's going to be great because everyone's going to be back." Of course, nobody was back. We're in Dubai overnight, so 10 people came to the show that night, and it was quite tough. It was kind of like pulling teeth because you don't have that immediate feedback from a room full of 1,000 people.
Yeah, the energy is different.
This room full of absolutely. It was basically it was very difficult when you don't have that give back from the audience. Because I feel when you have a bigger audience in front of you, people are more relaxed when they know there's a lot of people around them enjoying it as well. Whereas people are more afraid, I suppose, to laugh or clap. I suppose if they're scared, maybe someone else is looking at me laughing, so I won't laugh. So it's a harder environment when you don't have that give back for an audience. I think if you're a music act, it's much easier because you can perform, songs for them. But if you don't really need that response back as much as you do if you're a comedian or a magician or something like that.
And the mentalist side of your act, I'm always totally fascinated by mentalists because that's all hypnosis and looking into people's minds. And, I find that I find that whole area mind-bogglingly interesting. And it's very tied to magic, but they are two different things, aren't they?
Absolutely. Yeah, they're definitely different things. And a lot of mentalists or magicians, sometimes you find some guys who kind of take a bit of, maybe insults getting called a magician or a mentalist when they're one or the other. To me, it's all just the same. To me, right. I don't really mind. But there are definitely two different things. And when you're trying to approach them, like a mentalist act, I think it's a hard thing to sell a full show of just pure hardcore mentalism. Because I do a lot of it, but I try and sprinkle it with a bit of, still the comedy and the magic and the illusion weaved in between. Because I think, an hour show full, just straight mind reading, it can be tough going to watch that.
But you're cracking people's minds, and it's, there's obviously a science to it or a kind of like a way of doing it. That is not something that anyone could do. I mean, you could teach me a card trick, I'm sure. I probably wouldn't do it very well, but you could teach it to me.
I don't know about that, Edgar. I think I'd have to disagree. I think anyone can do it.
Really?
Absolutely. Because it's a whole mixture of things, a blend of psychology, idiomicro movements, as well as just there's a trick behind a lot of it most of the time. So it's a blend of all of these things.
Give me an example, Christian. You don't have to tell us how you do it, but give me an example of one of the things you do in your mentalist act.
Okay. I suppose it's... Let me think. I suppose a basic thing that I do in my mentalist routines would be a simple... You have someone in the audience... Maybe think of a friend or family member back home, or a pet, or their PIN code, or whatever it is, and throughout whatever method I decide to use that evening, you can divine whatever name, person, pet, animal, place that they're thinking of.
Okay,
and that's kind of the baseline, I suppose, of mentalism acts. You think of something, and I'll tell you what it is.
That's amazing, though. That's that mind reading, essentially.
I mean, you're kind of, I suppose, portraying to the audience that you can read minds when, in fact, there are a blend of, psychological misdirection and idiomicro movements, body language, and, magic principles behind how I'm actually doing the, quote-unquote mind reading.
And do you think that the best mentalists have an innate kind of sense of being able to do it? I mean, I don't know how to put this, but like you think of the great guitar players of the world, some are people just born with innate talent. And it's,
oh, for sure. Like names come to mind, like Darren Brown. Darren Brown is probably, I think, the world's greatest mentalist, if you want to brand him as a mentalist. Yeah. But I do think he's one of the greatest people to do it, for sure. It just comes naturally to him.
And what's the most memorable reaction you've had from an audience during your performance?
When it comes to the sides of mentalism and mind reading, the most memorable one I ever had, I was on stage in, I was actually in Antarctica.
Wow.
For this one.
You get around, Christian,
yeah.
Don't you? I was down at the hotel in Galway.
Got a lot of air miles and a lot of airlines.
Yeah. Go on anyway. You're in Antarctica and you're doing a mentalist act.
As you do, as you do. so I was on stage there and this woman came on stage and asked her to think of something from back home, and I didn't ask her to think of a person or a specific place or animal or anything. I just asked her to think of something from back home, And at the end of the routine, I'd revealed a name, and it was actually a childhood friend that she had that passed away.
Wow.
And yeah, and this when she revealed that someone was, that had passed away, because I've had it before where people might, you know, get really emotionally, I suppose they get a bit sad, and she was like elated and really happy, and she was kind of tears in her eyes, but happy tears that, you know, we were still talking about her friend today, and that she was getting to have this moment with her friend on stage in her mind. And yeah, that was quite a memorable performance, that one.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it's kind of, you kind of forget, I suppose, or take for granted the kind of impact you can have on people.
Yeah, the emotions of it.
When you do a show.
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose, you know, we as entertainers, you know, you're doing, you know, 1,000 shows all over the place, but you sometimes forget what people are taking away from your show.
Yeah. And are there people, when you get up on stage and you're ready to start your performance, are you looking around the room and you're saying to yourself, okay, that guy, that lady, that guy and that lady, and you've already got it in your head, you're like, okay, I can do something with those guys?
Sometimes, I actually am, yeah, sometimes. Depending on the theatre, especially if there are 2 or 3 tiered theatres, I'll hide up in the circle or something, or backstage upstairs, and I can have a peek outside. Sometimes you can see if some people are a bit more relaxed or a bit more tense, so you have a bit of a head start before you come on stage, and it's a bit of a lottery then if you haven't really got an idea of where you want to go with people.
Is there ever anyone you look at and you go, no, that's not going to work for me?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. For sure. And you'd be surprised. It's actually the ones that are more, I suppose, optimistic and really want to come on stage. They're the ones you tend to avoid.
Right.
Because for sure, that's the one that's going to be much harder to control, that environment on stage. So, because with magic, it's very much about audience management and following instructions. So if someone comes on stage and they're really outgoing and energetic and really want to get involved, which is great, and you love to see that, but sometimes, depending on the person, they could be a bit too much, and they can maybe almost start to take over, and it can cause things to go wrong. So I usually try and go for people who are, you know, it's usually the one who's the quiet one who puts their head down I'd like to use and not volunteer, the head goes straight down, don't pick me.
Oh, that's me. That's me in any
situation. So that's the first person I'll be going for.
Oh, well, it's good to know that. Next time I'm at a magic show, I'm going to be like, me. Oh, my God. Yeah, no, God, I get nightmares about being called up on stage, which is funny because, I mean, I work in like an outgoing business, but I'm terribly shy. It's very weird.
I think we're the same entertainers in general. You know, I think any, you know, radio host, entertainers, TV presenters, I think anything in that kind of environment, I think naturally we're more shy, introverted people, I suppose, when you're not on.
Isn't it funny? Yeah,
it is funny, yeah.
It's a funny thing. I mean, I'm more comfortable here talking to people all across the country than I would be if somebody asked me to stand up and talk at a gathering. I'm like, no, not me, please. I'm cringing. Yeah. I don't want to do it. There must be a psychological reason for that. And like yourself, you get up, you perform, it's like you switch on and you're ready to go.
Absolutely. I think it's just an innate, subconscious thing that we all have there. Once the lights go on and it all starts, you're ready to go.
It's showtime, baby. You mentioned Darren. you mentioned Darren Brown, and I've seen some of his shows, and they are very impressive. And I know growing up,
amazing.
You had the likes of David Copperfield making the Statue of Liberty disappear and walking through the Great Wall of China. Just mad stuff. Are there any famous magicians or historical figures in magic who've influenced your style? Like, who caught your eye growing up that you've gone, that's amazing?
The first one I really remember would be David Copperfield. It was have you ever seen his flying routine? I don't know if you've ever seen that. It was it was a massive thing, I think, in like the 90s. And when I saw David Copperfield flying across the stage, that I was mesmerized. I was straight out into the garden. I was about, I don't know, maybe 7, 8, 9 years old, trying to fly just like David Copperfield.
Jumping through hoops like the hula hoops. Because it was like everybody was like, well, he must have strings. But then he would fly through hoops and things like that. And it was like, how does that work?
I know. It's one of the most beautiful illusions I've ever seen in my life. And I hope one day I'll actually get to see it. I don't think he performs it anymore, unfortunately. But I'm hoping next year to even just go out to Vegas just to see his show in person for the first time.
Have you been to Vegas for lots of shows? Like, do you go to these shows and watch them?
I do go to the show. I've never been to Vegas, but I have been to a lot of shows for sure. I really enjoy watching, especially magic shows. I love watching magic shows, but I think I watch them maybe from a different perspective.
Yeah, of course.
Than, I suppose, layman would watch a magic show. I'm looking at the slights and the sleight of hand, and I liked how he did that. Oh, I like the method he used there. I like what they did there. That was very good. That's the stuff that interests me, I suppose, at a magic show, which is a bit sad because I really love that feeling of being fooled.
Yeah, I get you.
And it's quite rare these days that, I suppose, when I see a magic trick, that I'll be fooled. But when it does happen, I don't want to know because I love that feeling.
Well, I know, I hear
of
you.
Not knowing how that was done.
When I was growing up, I only ever wanted to work in TV and radio and work in films and things like that. And then I started doing it. And now I find it very hard to enjoy TV, radio and films and music as well, because I recorded with my band and now I listen to it. And I'm like, I would do it differently. I would do it, you know. So be careful what you wish for. It brings me to a question I got from one of our listeners, Martin. And he's got a great question, I have to say. Have you ever seen an illusion or a trick that left you baffled as to how it was done and who was the magician?
I'm trying to think now who the magician was. Yes, I did see an illusion that left me baffled. I'm trying to think, who was it? I think it was, his name is Hans Klock.
Hans Klock.
And I'm trying to remember where Hans Klock, he's really big in the magic world. I forget where he's from now. It's somewhere, I think it's Germany or Sweden or somewhere from that. And I saw him at the Blackpool Magic Convention a couple of years ago. And he was trying to go for the Guinness World Record of the most illusions done in about 2 minutes. And he did a serious amount of illusions. But one thing he did, he was standing on a stage and got, I suppose, locked into this frame, like a human-sized frame, and it was just perfectly framed his body. And he stood there in a starfish position. If you can picture it in your mind, arms outstretched, and standing there on stage, locked in position, and a woman just walked straight through him. She basically, one of the girls, she got up behind him and pretty much walked through his chest, came through the chest and out the front. And I was like, that was one of the most amazing illusions I've ever seen in my life.
And your knowledgeable magic brain was like, how did that happen?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That's amazing.
I love it. Oh, it's beautiful. It's such a great illusion. I've figured it out and I've seen it done and seen it made, but for, I don't know, maybe years, and whenever it was, a couple of years ago, I didn't want to know. It was beautiful. Just love that. I don't want to know. I love how amazing this looks.
And you take your act all around the world. I mean, I was going to ask you where was the most interesting place you did a show, but you answered that already with Antarctica. the cruises and travelling and everything, it's a great perk of the job. Is it different everywhere you go, or is there a running theme in the audiences you encounter?
It is definitely different everywhere I go. I suppose it's very similar in some acts because the show doesn't change too much. I suppose I change mainly for myself. I change 30-40% of the show every 6 months just for myself, to keep it fresh for myself. But it is different, even though it's the same show that I perform most of the time, because the audience is completely different. It's a different reaction every single time, which is what kind of keeps it interesting for me. Even when I'm doing weddings or corporate events around Ireland, doing close-up magic, like, card tricks or mind reading or whatever it is, it's the same tricks that I'll be doing, maybe table to table to table. But every group that I perform for will give me a completely different reaction, which makes it fresh and new every single time I do it. Even though I've done this thousands and thousands of times, it's like a brand new first time I'm doing it for a new audience every single time. So that's what keeps it fresh for me. So I really enjoy that about it.
Well, listen, find a job you love. You'll never work a day in your life, as they say. But there's a lot of people a lot of people listening in tonight, and we're getting loads of texts and WhatsApp messages wanting. And a couple of people have asked, they've said, look, one person in particular said their son wants to be a magician. Do you have any advice for somebody who wants to start out? Where should they go and what should they do?
The best place I would recommend, if you want to get into magic, there is the Society of Irish Magicians.
Okay.
If you've ever heard of them. And they meet every, it's the first Tuesday of every month in, I believe it is Cassidy's Hotel in Dublin, if you like. Or it's also online on Facebook and Instagram and all that. And there's an amazing community of magicians from ages 5 years old up to 90 years old. And it's just a wealth of knowledge for kids who really want to get into magic. Because I remember going to meetings and you see new kids coming in and just, you know, wide-eyed. And, you know, everyone's open. If you want to learn something, no problem. We'll teach you any card trick you like, anything you want to get you going and tell you anywhere you'd like. Even just getting a magic set off of, you know, Amazon or off the internet. It's a great place to start because they usually come with the same sort of sets of tricks, which kind of gets you going a bit. But I'd always recommend just even just a simple deck of cards and any card book on magic.
There you go.
Or any YouTube video on magic. That's how I started, you know?
Yeah, you got to start somewhere, and that sounds pretty good to me. So there's the advice. And you too could be travelling around the world and doing acts in Antarctica. If people want to learn more, Christian, they can get in contact with you at christiangraymagician.com. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct, yeah.
And what's next? Are you heading out on the road?
The next thing I'm doing, I'm flying out to Barcelona.
Hard
so
life.
I'm doing... it gets hard when you have to leave the gaff at 2 in the morning to get to the airport for 6 in the morning.
Just disappearing, that's all you do, you disappear and everyone's like, where's Christian going?
I just need to learn teleportation, that's my next big trick
there you
that
go.
I need to learn.
Oh, will you find that one out, will you let me know? Listen, Christian, thanks so much for joining me tonight. I really enjoyed that chat, and as I say, anyone who wants to learn more, go to christiangraymagician.com and find out more. Well, that's all I have time for here tonight on Nighttime Talk. I really enjoyed the show and I'll be back tomorrow to do it all over again. But between now and then, have a lovely night and a great day tomorrow. See you then. Good night.
Now, real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk.
Ireland's classic hits radio.